What sparked your passion for cooking?
I have a good appetite and I eat.
I'll often make subtle changes to the next batch of it.
As long as it has room to move around, it's classified as free range.
So my mother gave me a crash course in cookery when I was 16.
I remember sampling this amazing drink, thinking how I've never tasted coffee this good.
Which homemade desserts can be cheaper than shop-bought alternatives?
We want people to feel at home.
Hello and welcome to the first Flavour of 2014 with me, Matt Bentman, Ruth Reyes and Alan Alder. We hope you all had a great Christmas and a happy new year. We did, and we are pleased to be back and looking forward to what 2014 has in store.
Yes, if it's anything like last year, I can't wait. In our programme today, we look back over the year and how the food and drink scene has developed in Cambridge. Here's Alan with a few more details.
Hello, yes, 2013 was an amazing year. When we review our programmes for the last 12 months, with the number of new cafes and restaurants, the surging supper clubs and pop-ups, the various competitions that ran and showed what excellence and creativity there is in Cambridge, the first Eat Cambridge event, our own Tom Lewis with his wine and music analogies, and Aoife Maxwell's new cocktails, it was quite a year.
Yeah, and at the end of the programme, we'll be having plenty of details of events that will prove this year to be just as exciting.
Let's begin with some of the new eating and drinking places that have opened during the year. Some of them are now so much a part of our everyday lives that it's difficult to believe they've started so recently.
A new restaurant is opening in Bennett Street called Cow, spelled C-A-U. It specializes in Argentinian beef, so look out for some really good steaks.
Also in Bennett Street, a new Sicilian-style Italian cafe is opening in late February or early March.
Francesco, tell us a bit about Aromium, what it is.
Mm-hmm. Well, with Aromium, we are creating something quite unique in the Cambridge food scene. We simply are a truly independent, authentic Italian coffee shop with a Sicilian twist. My family has been running a very popular, successful coffee shop since 1957 in a beautiful Baroque town called Acireale in Sicily, and that's pretty much what we'll be doing. We'll bring all our traditions, all our recipes to the very heart of Cambridge, really.
Right, well that sounds fantastic.
Indeed.
And there is no competition for that. There's other Italian places, but not with a Sicilian twist, is there?
Indeed, yeah. As I say, we definitely want to, we wouldn't not open something that was already out there. You know, we will have a distinct element with our product.
Okay, so well tell me something about Sicilian food that Aromi will be selling.
Well, how long do we have? One thing is we focus on pizza, for example, and we do something different again. We do what's in Italy called pizza impala, which is freshly prepared on the site, where actually people will be able to see the oven, and we'll also be able to see the pizza chef making the pizza. But the size of the pizza is a bit longer, and normally you just cut and buy in slices. And the fantastic, other than the taste, the it's very soft. The pizza dough is left to rest for over 2 days, so the softness and the taste is
Some pub news now. The Milton Brewery, which as well as brewing some very good beer and also owns the Devonshire Arms, which was judged by Camera to be the Cambridge Pub of the Year, has announced that it is taking over the Haymakers in Chesterton. Excellent news. And also set to open in King Street is a pub with its own microbrewery on the site of the Jolly Scholar. The pub is owned by the group that did such a good job of redesigning the mill in Mill Lane.
I'm standing in the brew house of the Cambridge Brew House with James, who's the brewer. What sort of beers are you going to be brewing?
The first beer we're going to do is an American-style IPA, a really hoppy one for... That's what I've had a lot of requests for on Twitter and things. So.
And what sort of strength would that be?
That's going to be probably closer to 5%, so it'll be our more premium ale.
What's the capacity of the brewery? How long will it sort of keep you going for?
It's going to be, so it's 6 barrel in brewer's terms, which is probably about 1,000 litres or so per brew. So that's, you know, getting on for 1,600, 1,700 pints per brew. And I can brew up to 3 times a week. So we have 6 hand pumps on at the moment, 2 of which are beers that I've brewed, and 4 of which are very local beers. We have some from Lord Conrad's Brewery, Black Bar Brewery, so all within a sort of small radius. So
right.
That's a nice touch.
And is Joe from Black Bar still delivering by bike, do you know, or weren't you here to receive it?
No, I think he's coming in the van these days.
Oh, we caught that.
We're thinking of getting a bike. So we have a sister pub in the Mill in Cambridge, which we'll be supplying beer with, and I will be delivering every so often some beer on the back of a bike.
Right, so we'll look out for you. You'll become a local eccentric.
Yeah, just like Joe.
Mahmoud, you're the owner of Merhaba.
That's right.
Okay, and you're doing food from Turkey?
From Eastern Turkey.
What's on the menu that might be something that people in Cambridge would find particularly of interest and might not have had somewhere else?
Well, for example, lahmacun, nobody does in Cambridge. And the lahmacun is very well known in Turkey. It's very thin, like a pizza baked, and with minced meat on top of it. And you cook it in the oven, it takes about 10 minutes, and then you serve it freshly with some salad inside, and either you can take it home and eat it, or you can sit down in our restaurant and eat it here.
And it's made of a dough,
yes,
like a pizza is. Oh, is it those great big circles of dough?
That's right, yes.
It's like, and then it's folded over with the, yes, filling inside. Yes, I've had those. I think they're really good. Emin, what else would you mention? There's you've got pides as well. Are they not some sort of pizza type of thing?
They are actually flatbread with different toppings. We have vegetarian pide, or pide with minced lamb, or pide with Turkish sausage and eggs. We do all different toppings.
And are they proving popular, or is it going to take time for people to get used to them, do you think?
No, they're quite popular, I think, although we're quite new, because nobody else does them in Cambridge. We find that people come and try it, yes.
Yeah. When I was looking at the menu before, one of the things that I noticed was that there are some, I think, sort of quite familiar things, like dolma, the stuffed,
yes,
vine leaves.
Yes.
Which are, I think, a great favourite, aren't they?
Well, yeah,
that's one of the starters. But when I looked at the desserts, I expected to find something like baklava there, but I was interested that it wasn't there, and I was wondering if there was any particular reason for that.
No, there is no reason, but in every Turkish restaurant in England, not just in Cambridge, they all do baklava. We have different desserts in Turkey, why not we make others?
Richard, the pint shop, sounds like it's going to be selling beer, is that right?
Well, we definitely have an element of beer. We have a bar and we have a couple of dining rooms. In our bar, we're going to be selling British beer. We've got 16 lines of British beer, all from small craft British producers.
So any local to Cambridge or the Cambridge area?
There'll be some regional breweries, yeah. But the idea with the beer is that it will change all the time. We won't have any permanent taps. So slightly different to a brewery-owned pub where they'd sell the same beer predominantly all the time, our beers will change almost daily. And then alongside the beer, we're going to sell only two spirits on our back bar. Gin and whiskey, because historically they are what we've drunk as a nation. So we'll have 40 gins and 20 whiskies on our back bar.
Oh, that's impressive. Yeah. So will you be doing cocktails as well then?
No, not cocktails. The gin will be predominantly around gin and tonic, so we want to serve a really, really good quality gin and tonic. And then we'll do some seasonal twists on the gin. We're actually distilling our own gin. So we're working with the guys at the Cambridge Distillery.
Is that the one in Histon?
Yes.
Yeah, we've spoken with them.
Will and Lucy.
Yeah.
Because our address is 10 Pease Hill, so we're going to distill a gin using peas as one of the botanicals.
That will be interesting.
It'll be a summer gin, I think.
And what style of food?
It's British. Very simple British food. So two tiers of food. So in the bar area, we're going to have very simple, there'll be a beautiful glass cabinet on the bar and it will be full of food. And that will be stuffed sourdough cobs, potted meat, smoked fish, cheeses. In the winter, we'll hold a stew on the bar, so you have a bowl of stew with your beer. And then we've got two dining rooms, one on the ground floor, one on the first floor overlooking the Guildhall. And there we're going to cook around some historical cooking sauces. So we've got a big charcoal spit roaster, spit roast meats. We've got a big charcoal grill, and we're going to do long, slow cooking. So short, very tight, very seasonal. Menu will change two or three times a week.
So tell us a bit about the Olive Grove. When did you guys open?
Well, we opened 3.5 months ago on the 1st of April. And the Olive Grove was an old-time wish of mine ever since I arrived in Cambridge in 2002. Mm-hmm. I've always thought that the city lacks a proper Greek restaurant. And I got my chance to open the restaurant this year because I found this place here at a very good price. and yeah, the Olive Grove became a reality.
Has it been going well?
Well, I'm very pleased with how the British public enjoyed our food and how they, through word of mouth, they've promoted our restaurant within 3 months. We've already have a massive amount of reviews on TripAdvisor. Within 3 months, we had 140 reviews.
Oh, brilliant.
And yeah, I really appreciate how people appreciated us and our customer service and our quality of food. I think what that, as there are restaurants lacking here in Cambridge, quality restaurants, because most of them are chain restaurants, I think people have appreciated that we are independent, that we are value for money, that we serve fresh food, and that we always try to provide excellent customer service. And I think people have recognised that within a very short period of time, and that has made us feel that we can succeed here, because within 3 months we've managed to reach to a level where we can say that this might be a healthy business.
Yeah, no, it's really nice. I really like the decor, actually.
Yes, well, the inspiration is the Greek islands, mm-hmm. rather than ancient Greece. We get all our meat from Cambridge. It's locally sourced. We try to have organic produce as much as possible. We get all our fresh vegetables from Cambridge as well, and we get all our fish from Suffolk. Our fish come here daily, fresh. However, we do get some materials from Greece, which we ship ourselves, which is our own olive oil and our own olives.
Cakes and really good coffee are my key things that I really want to get across. And then there's going to be breakfast items and lunch. Lunch is going to be really good sandwiches, you know, sourdough bread and salt beef with gherkins and like really fresh ingredients, local as much as possible. That's what it's all about. I don't believe in having a huge long list of sandwich ingredients that you have to keep stocked in your fridge. I want to limit it to maybe 3-4 sandwiches a day, but change that, get really fresh seasonal ingredients and do it well.
I know you're a great lover of brunches. Are you going to be...
Brunch is my favourite meal of the day.
Right, so we're going to be able to eat brunch in your cafe, are we?
Yeah, all day Saturday, all day Sunday.
Definitely. And what sort of things will be...
I'm forever honing my my brunch repertoire. At the moment, I'm really into my sweet corn pancakes with crispy bacon, poached eggs. Perfected my hollandaise last weekend and homemade English muffins.
Anthony, you've just opened for the very first time.
Yes.
Tell me about the cafe. What sort of foods are you selling?
Well, being a traditional Sicilian cafe, we're trying to replicate a traditional bar from Sicily. So we're going to be selling a selection of sweet pastry items, including cannolo siciliano and various other mignons and tartlets. We are also selling a selection of tavola calda, which is hot fresh food, including traditional Sicilian arancini and a selection of pizzas. We also, our coffee brand is Sicilian, called Michele Adoro.
How did you choose that? Because there's quite a lot of different coffees to choose from.
Well, yeah, absolutely. We tried and tested several different brands and came to the conclusion that Michele Adoro is far superior to any other brand in quality. And so far, the feedback we've received has been fantastic.
And how would you describe the flavour of that coffee?
It's a medium roast coffee, and the aftertaste of chocolate and caramel, just fantastic. It keeps people coming back for more so far. So.
Well, that's good to know.
Absolutely.
And the foods, where are you getting the foods from?
We're working with a selection of local suppliers, including traditional Italian pastry chefs, traditional Italian chefs, who are all local, and we are preparing paninis and ciabattas on premises ourselves.
Yeah, so
with fresh ingredients.
Right, so it's all pretty fresh then.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And that was just a selection of new places. It featured Aromi, Maraba in East Road, The Pint Shop, The Olive Grove, Afternoon Teas and Café Sicilia. All good places, and we wish them well for 2014.
Yes, we do. And perhaps we could mention at this point that the Cambridge Food and Wine Society is having an outing to The Olive Grove, which is in Regent Street. It is on the 18th of January. Tickets are £30 for non-members and £28 for members. There are a few left. There will obviously be great Greek food, but there will also be the vintner from a winery in Greece that is launching its wines in the UK, and the vintner is going to be talking about them. It sounds like a very good night, and tickets can be bought from the Cambridge Food and Wine Society's website.
We should also remember the cafes that shut this year. We were sorry to see them go. Those include Café Julien, Massaro and Otto, all from Regent Street, and Fresh and Time from Pease Hill.
Yeah, and their demise wasn't the result of not working hard. I'm sure that people like Elaine from Massaro, for example, could possibly have done any more than she was doing. And we mustn't forget the closing of Pavitt's Pies either.
No, proof that even with a very high quality product and a good price, you can't guarantee a successful business.
Join me, Tony Della, with my weekly Northern Soul show every Tuesday evening, 7 till 9, playing classic Northern Soul, 70s and Detroit gems, right here on Cambridge 105, community radio in your city.
Supper clubs and pop-up restaurants were all the rage last year. What began some time ago with Plate Liquors and Francesca Romaning has now really taken off. Both supper clubs and pop-ups are really good fun, informal, friendly, and with a spirit of adventure. Best of all, they introduce us to high-quality food and adventurous menus that we may have not tried before.
For the first supper club is a theme of modern Indian food, which has five courses. All of our supper clubs will have five courses, and the kind of food that we have will, as I say, have a sort of classic French influence as well as Indian. So one of our starters, for example, is rillette of duck leg, which we're going to make at home by confying the duck leg in a spiced mix and then making the rillette, preparing the rillette from that and serving it with a sort of Indian flavoured mango and papaya salsa. So that kind of flavour combination is what people could expect when they come to eat at our supper clubs.
Okay, you mentioned duck. Are you catering for vegetarians
as
well?
Yes, absolutely. Got quite an exciting vegetarian menu. For every single course that we have vegetarian options. So, for example, with our main course for vegetarians, we're going to be tandooring some in vegetables such as a whole cauliflower and broccoli and serving it with a couscous that's been mixed with an Indian achari spice, so with mangoes and pickled limes in. And so those are the kinds of things that we'd be doing for vegetarians as well.
Right.
Vegetarian option and a meat option, and obviously then the desserts would be all suitable for all.
Right. Right, five courses. It sounds quite adventurous. So how much is it?
It's £30, and that includes a welcome drink and also soft drinks throughout the meal. And we hope people will feel it's good value. Certainly it's going to be a lot of work. We've got we've ordered our poussins from the local butcher and all kinds of local seasonal ingredients in it.
One of the things that I've always done, even though I've lived here for 16 years, is carry on cooking Portuguese food. One of the things that my friends like and always ask for is cod.
Right, so in your supper club then, I don't suppose you want really to give the menu away, because one of the pleasures of supper clubs is actually not knowing what you're going to get. But what other Portuguese dishes are there that people would enjoy, do you think?
With these supper clubs, the one thing I want to have always at the menu, and I'll give this away, is cod, Portuguese salt cod, which actually doesn't come from Portugal at all. It comes from Norway. And we always insist that it has to be from Norway for whatever reason. But it's getting easier to find in Cambridge. I've actually found a shop that sources it.
So is salt cod popular in Portugal?
It's very popular. It's we have different dishes all through the year, but one of the things that sticks all through the year because of its nature of it being salted and preserved is cod. There's over 1,000 recipes just for salt cod alone. And usually it'd be cod and potatoes, but made in 1,000 different combinations, if you can think of that. So yes, it's very popular in Portugal. Because and it'll be probably the star of the menu itself. So in all sorts of combinations, if I can. One of the things I want to do in the future, actually, is perhaps create a Portuguese cookbook. Because I'm an artist, I would like to illustrate it as well. So watch this space, perhaps in the next few months, there'll be something.
And I do feel in Cambridge there's something that has been just sort of tiptoeing on the edge of something quite... could potentially be quite cool. So, you know, we've got Leo with Steak and Honour and different little vans going round, and I think it's going to just snowball into something quite cool, and I'd quite like to be a part of that. So we're going to somehow get a little van to do around town. It's just quite hard with the universities and finding out where you can be, and the council are quite strict about different things, so I think it would have to be a sort of a case of an illegal curb sort of thing. But I mean, to get something like that going would be really cool. you know, and it's until you got to meet the right people. And so doing these pop-ups, you know, that all these different people are coming in from Twitter and they do supper clubs and all that sort of stuff. So once you get a core group of people who are like-minded and thinking the same what they want, we can hopefully go anywhere with it, you know, and get something really cool started in Cambridge. The people are here, you know, they either work in London or they go to London or they've moved back to Cambridge from London with kids, and they all want that London-esque type thing happening, you know, that vibe. Hopefully something like that will start.
Absolutely.
You know, and it'd be nice to be a part of it, really. Ideal situation would be like to find like a warehouse, you know, and put on sort of like illegal, it's almost like rave dinner parties in warehouses, sort of bit down, trip down memory lane, sort of nostalgia. I don't know if breaking into them would be a good idea, but I think something that's a bit cutting edge, not probably not the right word, just something a bit different, you know. People, you know, they want to go out for dinner, they've got money to spend, but going to that restaurant where it's that same formula, as it were, so trying to mix it up a little bit, something so you're getting a little bit more for your money. It's a proper night out rather than going out for dinner and then going somewhere else. You can, you know, be with 20, 30 people or more of the same people who just want to have, you know, they've got kids at home, so they want to make the most of that night, you know.
Yeah.
So that's what we want to do. But in the summer, we want to do pop-ups in a field somewhere and just sort of maybe like, I quite like mash like that. So like, you know, have someone making cocktails out of, you know, medical equipment and just something really quirky and, you know, just something different.
There we heard Nazima Pathan from Franglais Kitchen, Stella Pereira and Jay Scrimshaw of Urban Street Kings. Stella's having a supper club tonight, so we envy those who are going tonight. At the end of the programme, we'll bring you an update of the forthcoming supper clubs.
Now, Jay from Urban Street Kings mentioned the difficulty of getting pitches to sell street food in Cambridge. There are a lot of restrictions, and we spoke with Councillor Colin Rosensteel about this, and then with Councillor Gail Marchant-Daisley. Finally, we found out about Jack's Gelato, who is limited to selling outside the city centre.
With these new pitches, do you feel that the city centre will then be saturated, that there's no space for any more? Do you think that will then be it?
No, we've been fairly cautious on the capacity to add pitches. One of the areas where there will be quite a change is Sussex Street, which was pedestrianised quite some years ago now, but the space then created hasn't been looked at very attractive for the attractions, and we think we can easily get two pitches in there and still have room to for all the other activities one would hope to get in a pedestrian street. We will see how we go from there.
But once people have got their pitches, do they have them just for the year?
We've got some criteria of quality we expect people to keep up to. So if somebody else comes along wanting to bid for that subsequently, then they can be displaced, because we're keen to maintain the best quality.
But once the year is up, do they have sort of first request?
They're likely to, because they are the... As in anybody who's established, they've got a track record. Anybody applying doesn't. But we will be fairly tough on anybody who we don't think is keeping up to scratch.
And how do you monitor that?
It's quite extensive, particularly with food. You see, there has to be monitoring from the point of view of public safety.
Yeah.
For food premises, and therefore, and the people. It's a city centre. There are people out and about. People complain to us, that goes on in the record and so on. So we do have a reasonably round picture.
Right, but that's not monitoring the quality of the food.
We're not trying to do a sort of egg on runner job on it, but clearly if people find that the food isn't very good, they'll make complaints, and which is another channel. Also, we do hear people who are pleased with.
So do you feel the City Council has a drive, really, to try and encourage really good, high-quality streets?
One of the constraints for us is that the street traders are only part of the overall picture in the city. We have shops, obviously, some of those are food establishments. We have provision.
Gail, you've had the idea of having a regular food market on the Gwydir Street car park. Could you tell us a little bit about the idea?
Yes, certainly. I mean, it was really the Mill Road Winter Fair that put it into my mind, and seeing the great success of the food market there. And it struck me that it would be a very good thing for the area if we could get something done on a more regular basis. And I first started talking to residents about it in early 2012, and the response was overwhelmingly, in fact, unequivocally positive. I sounded out some traders as well, and they also were interested in the idea, and it's grown from there. And so from that initial idea, it now seems that it's going to become a reality, which I'm delighted about.
Is it possible to ensure that local suppliers, local traders get pitches there?
Yes, and I think it's important that we do. This is, after all, a local initiative, and it's certainly right that local traders and producers will be given first call. And it's only when pitches have to be filled that aren't filled by local people that will go further afield.
Yeah. Do you think this might lead to similar initiatives in other parts of Cambridge?
I don't see any reason why it shouldn't. I think that people will look at this carefully to see how successful it will be, and I think it will be successful in bringing more people to the area, in sort of livening up the area. We all know the great atmosphere there is in Mill Road around the Winter Fair, and if we can replicate that even on a small scale, I think that other areas will look at this and will think, well, there isn't any reason why we can't do something in our area, whether that's north of the river or elsewhere. It's perhaps going to be a mixture of producers and retailers. So I should imagine that mix will be in there. But I think the devil in that detail has yet to be worked out.
Mm.
Jack, how long have you been making your gelato?
I've been making it in restaurants for about 12 years. I've been doing it as a dedicated business for two. So this is my third summer. I'd seen this whole kind of proper, genuine street food movement happening in the States and that was coming to London and stuff. And I wanted to do something within that but then something that was still along the same kind of lines of what I was doing, of working with really good ingredients and creating something really beautiful. So I looked at lots of different ideas, and my father's lived in Italy for the past 20 years, so I have lots of connections with Italy, and so I kind of thought that it would be nice to bring some of that to here.
Well, your gelato has had real plaudits, hasn't it? People have praised it to the skies. What makes it so good? Is it your technical expertise, the ingredients? One of the things I noticed about it is just how intense the flavours are and also how smooth the texture is.
Yes, I guess I use organic milk, organic cream, fair trade sugar, Valrhona chocolate, Bronte pistachios, you know, blends of, I use Tahitian vanilla and Madagascan vanilla and use them together so you get the best of both. And I mean, there's no compromises whatsoever on the ingredients.
Yeah, I really enjoyed the combination of, I think it was vanilla with the strawberries and olives, black olives, that you did at Fitzbillies a while ago.
Yeah, it was a pop-up I did with Steak and Honour, and I like doing these kind of events because it is a chance to kind of, you know, A, you're doing a full pudding, which is nice, and B, you know, you can really have fun and you know, people are coming specifically for that event and they're willing to be more adventurous, so you can push the boundaries with how you do things. So, yeah, I like bringing these kind of combinations that previously belonged in Michelin-starred restaurants to, you know, bringing it to the street and offering it to people for £2 is nice.
I know that you go to Grantchester and you're often outside the Botanic Gardens, but never in the city centre itself. Why is that?
There's only certain areas of the city in which I'm allowed to trade, so I'm out on the fringe.
The last voice you heard there was Jack from Jack's Gelato, and there's good news for fans of his. Nord in Sussex Street is now selling his products in their cafe.
Yeah, that is excellent news. And you're listening to Flavour on Cambridge 105. We're reviewing the last year of food and drink in Cambridge. Coming up, food poverty and wine and music. But first, let's remind ourselves of the culinary competitions that took place over the last year.
Yeah, on Flavour last year, we covered the Cambridge Bake Off and the University of Cambridge Culinary Competition. The standard of entries at both was very high. In June, Fiona Macduff, a scientist researching into cancer, won the Cambridge Bake Off, and Alex Johnston from Clare College was judged the University Chef of the Year.
Fiona, well done for winning.
Thank you.
A fantastic cake. What's it like being in the Cambridge Bake Off? Have you had to give over your whole life to making cakes?
Well, so initially when I entered the competition, I thought it would be fun, but it's actually been really stressful. But obviously now in hindsight, it was amazing.
It's all been worthwhile.
It was definitely all worthwhile. baking, I love baking, so the opportunity to do it for people other than just myself and my husband has been amazing.
Yeah, but you've had to practice a lot.
So I obviously work during the day. I'm a scientist, so I work quite long hours. So it's been really difficult coming home from work straight into the kitchen. I've barely seen my husband. We've lived very separate lives the past 2 months, I would say, and it's been just been cake and more cake.
Right.
But
any estimates of how many cakes you've made over the last couple of months? Because you must have done practice ones.
For this one, it was impossible to do a practice because it's just so enormous. But the rounds before that, so I did 8 Victoria sponges in the space of a week, 7 creme patissier rounds. And yeah, it's been a lot of cake. And yeah. My poor husband's diabetic, so he's had to put up with a lot of sugar.
So you've not been able to eat any of them?
Technically not, but no, it's been good practice.
It takes more insulin, it's fine.
Yeah. Right, well, congratulations anyway.
Thank you so much.
That's great.
I'm so happy. Thanks very much. Cheers.
Brian, what were you judging?
The major competition, which is Chef of the Year, which is open to all the colleges. And obviously they compete for a cup which is going back a number of years. It's competed for every year as the chef, best chef in
so this is
colleges.
This is a prestigious prize,
yeah,
this one.
It's quite an achievement to win this cup, which is probably at the end of the day the most important one of the whole competition.
Yeah.
So,
and what were standards like?
Yeah, they're very, very good. And the main thing is they need to produce 3 courses that really every course is good. It's no good having an outstanding main course and then maybe they're let down because they've got a weaker main starter or dessert. But you know, overall the winner today produced 3 equally good dishes, really nice flavours, good combinations. And you know, a lot of the time these chefs, they make lovely looking dishes but maybe they haven't tasted them enough and there's not a balance of flavours. And one of the most important things in these competitions is not just tasting these products yourself but letting other people taste them as well, to get an opinion that is a nice rounded flavour. Because
but it requires good ingredients as well.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, part of the competition, they have to use major products in the dishes, obviously, because we sponsor the competition. So, you know, we do like the stocks, marinades, fruit bases. So part of the criteria is that they must put them in each course. And some of the dishes they came up with has really used their imagination as well. And it's very good. And each year the standards seem to get a little bit better, you know.
Yeah,
so,
well,
yeah,
just
really,
as it should be.
Really good day, yeah. And, the winner will keep the cup for a year and then because they compete again. So.
Okay, thanks very much. Thanks.
For the Best in Show Award 2013 Cambridge Culinary Competition goes to Alex Johnson from Clare College. The last award of the day is the Stewards' Cup.
And the winner is... And the winner is Clare College.
Alex, you're the overall winner. So very well done.
Thank you very much. I'm very happy. It's a long night.
Yeah, and you're working at Clare.
Yeah.
So you're going to ask for a pay rise.
Yeah, I don't know about that. I think we all mucked in very well.
Well, I think Clare did very well.
We all helped each other and all.
Right.
Yeah, all.
So how much preparation did you have to do?
A lot. A good week. Preparing it all by the weekend. Not the weekend just being the Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, first of the day.
Yeah. But you've also had the day job as well.
Yeah.
So.
I know, yeah.
You can't have had much sleep lately.
No. Well, last night, I think, some people didn't even go to sleep last night. And I went to sleep about 1, got up about 4:30.
Yeah.
Go back in, and then did it again, and going for it again. And, yeah.
Of the things that you've produced today, which are you most proud of, do you think?
I think my lamb dish. Mink crumb, top can of lamb, roulade belly, black pudding and artichoke, tofu and potatoes, a cream swede, wilted spinach, baby carrots, mushrooms and a port jus.
So, well done not only to all the winners of last year's competitions, but to all those who had a go.
In Your Company is Cambridge 105's business programme, presented by me, Sam Davis. In Your Company captures the diversity of the Cambridge business scene by talking to not only the high-tech headline grabbers, but also the sole traders and the startups and the experts who can help us make sense of it. Listen to In Your Company at 3 p.m. on Saturday afternoons every fortnight. And podcasts of our shows are available on the Cambridge 105 website. Community radio in your city, Cambridge 105.
Now, another and far less welcome trend in the last year has been in the growth of food poverty. It's a story that's not going away, and we will be covering it again this year. Both food banks and Food Cycle are dealing with increasing numbers of people, and at the same time, there is food that's being turned away by supermarkets.
Right, so they're got from the field, they're packaged according to the way that the supermarket will want it, so the supermarkets have ordered them.
Yes.
And then?
Well, they give you a ballpark figure. When we were growing apples and pears and plums and sending them to supply a major supermarket chain, they have a policy of turning around produce that is surplus to their requirements. And this is written into their contract. If you have a contract with them, they reserve the right to take all or none of what you send. And the upshot of that is that you have to be quick on your feet to be able to put it to some use.
So it doesn't ever get to the supermarket then?
Well, it gets to a middleman usually, right. or to a supermarket depot, right. At which point they will say... they will phone the grower, the producer, and say, you've sent us this quantity of, shall we say, plums. I had an instance last year where one of my neighbours produced some beautiful Victoria plums, absolutely superb. He is a very good fruit grower. And it was sent to the pack house. And I carry something for that.
So let's start off by and like scent of it's especially in hits, which is what we tackle with. And another really big part of food waste is food that gets thrown away in our homes. It's actually one of the biggest causes of... So food waste as a whole is a massive problem, and there are, as you said, a lot of different initiatives taking place to try and tackle that in lots of different ways. And the brilliant thing about Food Cycle is we're not just talking about change, we're really leading to change, because we're taking something that would be wasted and we're turning it into something good.
Absolutely.
So Food Cycle is a charity. Since it started in 2009, they've cooked over 63,000 meals, which has supported over 3,000 beneficiaries. You know, that's a lot of support to lots of different parts in the country, and that will have saved around 64,000 kilograms of surplus food from going to waste.
Oh my goodness.
So in the grand scheme of things, it's a drop in the ocean, but it's a positive change all the same.
Another support for people who are not able to afford enough food is provided by food banks. I spoke with Ursula Hornatschka at the Church of Our Lady and the English Martyrs, or OLAM, in Hills Road about the food bank that operates from there and which is supported by the Trussell Trust.
Ursula, why do people need to use a food bank?
They need to use a food bank because they are having difficulties with either paying bills and they've lost their jobs, they've got a bereavement or somebody's sick in the family, so their income coming in isn't as great as it has been in the past.
So they can't afford food?
Well, I suppose many people, it's a choice between buying food and perhaps paying their bills. For people to have to come and ask for food is a very demoralising and degrading thing to have to do. It isn't something that people do very lightly. But people have to first of all go to an agency like the Citizens Advice Bureau, and then with their voucher they then have to go to a distribution centre where they're meeting another group of people that they don't know to present a voucher. And usually at the distribution centres people are very welcoming and will offer them a cup of tea or coffee and sit down and a chat. Some people just come in and take their box of food.
And how long is that food to last them?
The food is for 3 days, and it's a box of food which is tinned and dried goods, so it's non-perishable goods. And it's quite a good box of food that if you are able to cook and know how to use the items well, you can make it last for a week, which is what some people have told us they've been able to do.
Some ministers, Lord Freud, said it was difficult to know if more people are going to food banks was simply because there are more food banks.
I think there are more food banks because there's a tremendous need for them, otherwise they wouldn't be arising. And people are using them because there is a need.
How can people donate food to a food bank?
They can donate food or money to the food bank by looking on their website or telephoning them. There are lots of boxes in, I think, Tesco, Sainsbury's, Waitrose, where you can deposit food. Lots of churches donate on a much regular basis. We here at Olem have a collection the last weekend of every month. But you can usually ring up the number and make an arrangement of delivering food.
But another area where food is wasted is allotments. And I'm sure this is, you know, on a tiny scale compared with what we've been talking about. But allotment holders don't always gather all their produce. Raspberries seem to be prone to being ignored for some reason. And also, of course, there are seasonal gluts. But if you are an allotment holder, you can try and sell your produce to shops. Some independent shops may take them. The farm shop on Lensfield Road does from time to time. You won't make much money out of it, though, but at least it prevents waste. Or maybe Food Cycle would be interested.
There we heard Brian Green from the Farmer's Outlet Shop in Lensfield Road, Zoe Chambers of Food Cycle, and Ursula Hernatchka from the Church of Our Lady of the English Martyrs, or OLEM. Donating to food banks and volunteering at Food Cycle are just two of the things we can do to help. But we are wasting food ourselves. Forgotten veggies at the back of the fridge, the gone-off cream that we forgot about after making a cake. I know I'm very guilty of that. And the whole lot. We need to be conscious of what we buy and where. Feel free to download the podcast from July 27th and have a listen to the food waste episode to see if there's anything more you can do.
Hello, I'm Harry Welburn. Join me on Roots, a world music show with an emphasis on Latino and American rural music. That's every fortnight, Wednesday night, 11 p.m. to 1 a.m. on Cambridge 105, community radio in your city.
Now, one of the great innovations of the last year must be Tom Lewis's use of music to describe wine. Useful and lots of fun. But when you mention this idea to people, you may get some rather quizzical looks. It takes a bit of explaining, so who better than Tom to do it?
It can be quite difficult to describe a wine just by writing about it. It would be like trying to describe a painting to someone who's never seen it. And if it was a painting, it would be an abstract one at that. So for me, analogies are helpful in giving a sense of, you know, what is this wine like overall, not just a description of the individual parts.
Okay.
There are also similarities in the language that we use to describe wine and music. I mean, for me, it's a very personal thing, but I find the structure of a wine and a piece of music, there are distinct parallels. So if I take the example of something like a rock band or a symphony orchestra that you might listen to, there are the structural underpinnings. And by that, I mean the deep notes, so the drums and the bass. And to me, that's what's holding the music together. And you feel these as much as hearing them. Now, above that, you've then got things like the melodies and the harmonies. These are easy to enjoy. They're immediately noticeable aspects. So if we think about a wine, it has the same thing. It has the structural underpinnings, which I think of as the tannins and the acidity, and then the fruit flavours are something on top. You know, those pleasing fruit flavours that you immediately notice. What I'm trying to do, as I said, is really find something that sums up the impression of what that wine is, you know, what it feels like overall, rather than just a listing out a series of descriptions.
Okay, well, let's try one and see if it works.
Hopefully it will.
Yeah.
So my first one is Riesling. It's a white wine. Its characteristics are it has quite high acidity, and the fruit is, as I've said, mainly lemon and lime, citrus and freshness. But it's not a completely light wine. It has a weighty minerality to it. So as a wine, I'd describe it as it's more challenging than some. It's energetic. It's quite thrilling. It's angular. It's sort of in your face.
And the music would be?
Well, the music to describe a wine like this, to me, is the Rolling Stones. And the particular piece that really sums it up, I think, is Jumping Jack Flash.
One, two.
So that's the Rolling Stones, and to me they're basically a blues rock band, and they've always been true to that. They're energetic and in your face. They're not trying to please. There's no softness there. If you think of someone like Mick Jagger, you know, he's, when he performs, he's skinny, he's all knees and elbows. And the sound of the Rolling Stones is never big and produced. It's instantly recognisable. So it's a classic benchmark.
Right, so that's the benchmark for Riesling.
For
okay,
Riesling.
Let's turn the Rolling Stones off. What's next?
Well, within white wines, the two great varieties are Riesling and Chardonnay, so we have to do Chardonnay next. And for Chardonnay, it is a very versatile grape, but I'm thinking here of that sort of riped, oaky Chardonnay, the sort that was really popular in the 90s. You probably had it at lots of dinner parties that you went to. And for that style of Chardonnay, the thing that's really key to its flavour is the oaking, the way that the wine is matured in oak barrels, usually new oak. And so a lot of its character comes from the way that it reacts with the wood. So new oak is going to give a Chardonnay flavours of sweet vanilla, oatmeal-y butteriness. And the oak is toasted, and that is, it's charred, it's burnt on the inside by the cooper. So you'll get varying degrees of toastiness in the wine as well. You'll get what we call leesiness from the barrel ageing, and that's the flavour of the lees, which are the dead yeast cells that the wine sits on for an extended period. If you add into that finally the sort of naturally ripe citrusy fruit and sharp acidity that you get, that's your oaky Chardonnay.
Right, so oaky Chardonnay has ripe citrus fruit, sweet vanilla, toastiness, buttery oatmeal and creamy Brazil nuts, leesiness, the flavour of the yeast, and a sharp acidity. So I'm struggling with the musical
analogy. There's a lot in there, and that's exactly sort of the challenge. But to me, it has to be the Beatles. The reasons for that are numerous. I mean, just as the Beatles and the Stones were the two greats, but very different in what they do, Chardonnay and Riesling are the two greats of wine.
Okay, but there's more to it than that?
Well, there is. The next level is that with the Beatles, the complexity comes not from their energy, as we saw with the Rolling Stones, but from their production methods. You know, you listen to a Beatles track and it's instantly likeable and versatile.
OK, let's hear some. Love is all you need. 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 Love is all you need.
As we can hear there, that was the end of All You Need Is Love. And the Beatles retreated into the studio and focused on production techniques. So listen to that. There's layers of sound. There's whole lots of things going on. And that's where the complexity in this song is coming from. It's from the layering and the contrast that they create through the juxtaposition. There are all sorts of bits going on there. If you took one element on its own, it would be pleasant enough and bland. Two would probably be quite interesting, but three or four or five, and that's where the complexity is coming from.
I think that really works, actually, because the complexity in that music and, you know, your description of the complexity of the Chardonnay, I can see that exactly.
Good. We're going over to the dark side now, and we're looking at a Greek grape that's called Xenomavro. And it was described to me by a Greek master of wine as a surly sourpuss of a grape. It's all about the tannins and the acidity. So what is Xenomavro like? I mean, the fruit is sort of sharp cherry flavours, and those can be red, black cherry, but there'll always be a bit of sour cherry in there. And then the fruit is sort of red bell peppers and red tea. This, to me, is a really focused, energetic grape, and it's one that's quite hard work to live with. It's not sort of... there's no softness, no sort of come hither and no fleshiness on it. But as I say, if like me you're a bit of a wine geek and you like that sort of thing, it's beautiful, but in a dark and rather feisty sort of way.
And, right, so what's the analogy for this one then?
Well, for Xenomavro, the analogy has to be that the punk poetess of the 1970s, it's Patti Smith.
Take me now, baby, here as I am. Pull me close, try and understand. Desire is hunger, is the fire I breathe. Love is a banquet on which we feed.
Yeah, Yes, well, that really is sort of quite dark and feisty.
Dark and feisty,
isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah,
yes,
works brilliantly. Great.
You know, and I think, you know, the analogy even extends to Patti herself. You know, she as well as her music, she herself is quite. You know, take a look at the cover to that album. You know, she's dark, she's exotic, she's feisty, she's full of energy and intensity.
Yes. And that was Tom Lewis, the Cambridge wine blogger, with some music and wine analogies. Tom will be back in 2 weeks' time with his recommendations for wines for Valentine's Day. So that is how 2013 was. How will 2014 turn out? Is the food scene in Cambridge big enough to support the Pint Shop, Fitzbillies Restaurant and the Cambridge Brew House, where there is some overlap in what they're offering? I think we may see some changes to at least what one of them is doing.
Yeah, and as we promised earlier, here is some news about supper clubs. They tend to book up very quickly, but you may be in luck. You can find out more about them from their websites. Now, the Olive and Pea Supper Club is taking place on the 18th of January with a menu of British food. There are four courses and it costs £26.
Estefania Led Ramos is having an evening of Spanish food on Thursday, the 23rd of January at the Black Cat Cafe in Mill Road at 7:30. It costs £25 plus £3.50 per bottle for corkage. As with all supper clubs, it's essential to book in advance. Her website is Que Rico Tapas.
Franglais Kitchen is presenting an evening of French Vietnamese cuisine on the 30th of January. There are four courses. The suggested donation is £30.
And Damien Wozniak has six tickets left for a Valentine's Day pop-up. Damien has worked in two Michelin-starred restaurants and Noma in Copenhagen, which has been voted the world's best restaurant for three consecutive years. Now you can tweet Damien at ChefDamienW. There are 14 courses and live cooking, and it takes place at an address in Newnham.
Deepa Mistry is organising an evening of vegetarian Gujarati food in February. She is about to announce details via her blog, The Lazy Giraffe, which also features jewellery, so don't think you've got the wrong one if that's what you come across first.
Some different news now. The Pint Shop is doing two courses for £10, Monday to Friday from 12 until 7 next week. The Camera Winter Ale Festival will be at the University Social Club in Mill Lane from the 23rd to the 25th of January, and the Steak and Honour Van will be at Cambridge Wine Merchants on Cherry Hinton Road this coming Thursday, the 16th of January, from 7:30 p.m, and the wine bar at the Cambridge Wine Merchants will be open for drinks to accompany your burgers.
And a reminder that the Cambridge Food and Wine Society is having an outing to the Olive Grove, which is in Regent Street. It is on the 18th of January. Tickets are £30 for non-members and £28 for members. As well as food, there will be the Vintner from a winery in Greece that is launching its wines in the UK. Tickets can be bought from the Cambridge Food and Wine Society's website.
We'll be back in 2 weeks' time when, amongst other things, we'll be hearing from Clara Paul about her first book. Gigi Perry will be talking about food and drink societies at the university. Aoife Maxwell will be creating a new cocktail, and Tom Lewis will be recommending some wines.
Thanks, Alan. And that, of course, brings us to the end of another show, the first show for 2014.
And don't forget to follow Flavour on Twitter, at Flavour105. That's where we'll tweet Cambridge food and drink news. You can also find previous episodes on our podcast page on the Cambridge 105 website.
Coming up next is Saturday Lunch with Davina and Scratch. Then at 2 p.m. there's Bookmark, the Cambridge 105 book show hosted by Lee and Alex, featuring Cambridge-based writers. At 3 p.m. it's In Your Company with Sam Davis. And at 3:30 there's the excellent Science Show with Roger Frost and Chris Creese. At 4 p.m, 2 hours of sports live with Chris Duerden. And then from 6 till 7 you can tune into Jason Allen.
So, until the 25th of January, it's goodbye from Flavour.
Goodbye.
Goodbye. Bye.